Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Phileas Club, the show where we get people from around the world to tell us how they saw the news from the past month. This is episode number 39 for September 2011. Hello everyone and welcome to the Phileas Club. My name is Patrick Beja and apparently my memory is faulty because I didn't remember what month it was. It might be because of the terrible flu that I'm afflicted with, but probably not. It's just my brain not working properly as usual. So this is the Phileas Club. You know, it's the show where we get people from different parts of the world to bring their knowledge, their wisdom, and their culture with them in their little bag and deliver it to everyone so that we can enjoy it. And one of the most wise persons that I know, one of the wisest people that I know, is here with us today, and that's Turkey from Saudi Arabia. How are you doing?
What? Yeah, I'm wise, dude. Come on, don't give me don't blow me up too much. Seriously.
So maybe you don't have that in your country. It's called irony. I was making fun of you.
No. That was sincere. I heard it. This was coming deep from inside you, dude. I could clearly feel it all the way here.
So thanks for being here as you always are.
Sure. And, always good.
You are not alone. It's a smaller show. I mean, we had a giant show last time, and today it's a little bit more intimate, a little bit more cozy, because we only have one other person with us, but it's someone I'm very glad to welcome again. It's Paolo from... What, did you think I was going to say someone else?
No, I was shouting at my cat. It was attacking right. My feet.
Of course. So it's Paolo from Saudi Arabia who's being very quiet and very polite. Thank you so much for joining again.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Saudi Arabia?
Oh, no, I'm from South Africa.
Did I say Saudi Arabia? It's SA, you know? It's the same thing. South Africa, of course.
I've lived in Saudi before, but yeah.
Oh, you have?
I lived in Saudi when I was very young. I lived in Riyadh for about 7-8 years.
Hmm. Interesting. But you are in South Africa now.
Correct.
And people who have been listening to the show for a while might remember you from all the way back to May 2010. So, yeah, it's been over about a year and a half.
Yeah, so we talked the last time. It was just about before the World Cup here in South Africa kicked off, and it was a great success. That was about the time, and we talked about, I think, some of the same issues we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how much of the world actually doesn't change all that much. So a year and a half later, I guess we can start with what we started last time you were here, which is Greece. Which has been doing the, I would say, you know, most of the headlines for a good part of the month, and at least for us here in France, quite deservedly so, because it doesn't seem like they're getting it together, and they're putting our whole economy and actually other countries' economy too in peril. And it's not like we're panicking, I don't think. I mean, we're seeing Greece in difficulty, and Italy is also not in the best shape. That's the least we can say. And there's a sense of it's troubling, but we're not at panicking stage yet. And I don't know if that's us having some sort of wishful thinking, self-persuasion of some kind, But it doesn't seem like we're quite at the, oh my God, the world is going to end yet. But it's still, you know, Greece is not in a great shape. So we are definitely paying attention, I would say. What about you, Paolo? I mean, you know, South Africa seems like a pretty far place to be affected by this directly. But you're still, I would guess, you know, one of the most Western-cultured African countries, so maybe you hear about this more than others.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we do have it in our news. I guess not as much as maybe France, because it doesn't affect us as directly. But I think Greece's economic situation definitely directly influences the economic situation in Europe, which in turn affects everybody else. So
yeah, I guess the one thing that would probably be absolutely worldwide important, and that we've been mentioning as a vague, remote possibility that we've been mostly pushing away, is Greece exiting the euro, the eurozone, which would mean the whole euro is destabilized, the currency, and that would definitely affect the world economy. So I guess at least that would be mentioned.
Yeah, you know, I think back to what because a lot of economies in the world today are in a lot of trouble, and I take America as an example. Like, why are they in the situation they're in? And I think they're in their situation for completely different reasons to the Greeks. The Americans, I think it's got a lot more to do with the government legislation that was taken away, and corporations, you know, running wild with finances. And I think Greece is in a very different boat when it comes to that. In my opinion, I think it's not a government problem with Greece. I think it's more an issue with the Greek people. And
because they're all lazy, of course.
Well, I mean, you can say that.
I'm joking, but that's a little bit. Again, that I'm not saying that's what it is. There is a little bit of that view, not as clearly. No one would say it like that, of course, but there's a little bit of that. There is a feeling that you know, they've been coasting on their deficit for so long that now they have to pay up, and it's a little bit irking. I guess we mentioned that in previous shows. It's a little bit irking when they're going down in the streets and saying, "Oh, we don't want to make sacrifices." And certainly they have reasons. You know, they think that the government is the one that wasted the money, and they don't want to have to pay for their greed or laziness. But there is a sense that, you know, well, you messed it up, so now you have to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons why I think you also had me on the show last year was because I have a bit of a Greek connection. My family's heritage is Greece, and I was there in June. I was in Greece, and I was talking to some of the people there who were working in the shops and, you know, at the bar, and you know, that the feeling I got from the Greek people I talked to was that they very much were anti the whole situation that the EU was proposing on them. They felt like the Germans were the bad guys, and, you know, they were doing nothing but trying to live their lives normally. But I don't think as a people they really grasped the idea that this was caused by themselves, and I think they feel like this is something the EU has put on them.
But don't, you know, they, as a people, don't they understand that there is a deficit, you know, nationwide deficit, and that is the heart of the problem? And that the EU is actually paying to, you know, keep them afloat?
I think what's happened is that the people have been, so like you said, surviving on this deficit for so long that they've gotten comfortable with the fact that they can live the way they live and get away with it. And now, because it's kind of caught up with them, especially because of the economic situation with the rest of the world, they are put in this position where they have to account for what's happened. And they're saying, whoa, this was never the case before. Why is the EU making this such a big deal now? Why is it our fault? Hmm. You know? And I can see why they say that, but I mean, I personally don't agree with what they're saying, because in my opinion it comes down to the cultural aspect of the Greeks. I think they are not as concerned with the same things, let's say, as an American or someone from the UK or someone from France, where, you know, you work hard, you live hard, and you pay your taxes, and, you know, you go along life in a certain way. I think they live, their culture is a lot more about living life well, like taking a nap in the afternoon, eating well, and then the job is kind of like a side issue. You know, the job is not as important, let's say.
Hey,
as
that's the way I live my life. I want to live my life, so I completely understand. I mean, and by the way, I have Greek roots too, so maybe that's where it's coming from.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can understand, and in a way, I kind of look at it as, you know, I think that's how everybody should live their lives, because the Americans, I don't know if that's, I mean, everybody's got a different opinion on how life should be lived, but they work themselves to death in a lot of ways. And, you know, their husbands work, wives work, you know, children work at a young age. It's not in a bad way, but their lives very much revolve around their work world. And
well, yeah, I guess one thing I'd like to say at this point is, The Greeks are having sort of a bigger issue with their debt, but it's not like the other ones, you know, France and others included, have been paying their debts. We're just a little bit less in debt than the Greeks, but we're still in an incredibly horrible situation in that regard, and we're sort of trying to balance the budget a little bit. And But it's clear that it's not like we can look at them and say, haha, you suck and we rule. We're just less bad off than these guys are. So
I think it comes down to the people, like I said, because I think the French people and the Italian people or the people in the UK understand that this is a dire situation for the country, and it's caused by bad management of funds, and you know, it's something that the government has to work out, and the people understand if we're going to pay higher tax, let's get out of this situation. Whereas the Greeks, I don't think follow those lines as they don't understand it as much. They think it's more something else has been thrown upon them, and this is just my opinion, but I think they resent the fact that now they A, have to pay higher taxes, B, have to relinquish control to the Germans or the rest of the EU, and they're not happy about that because they've got to change their way of life.
Sure.
Which,
yeah. Well, I mean, in France, if something like that happened, I mean, we're now increasing taxes a little bit, but absolutely people would not be happy about it. It's not like I'm saying, yeah, we would gladly pay more and not blame the government, but I guess we would understand that France has to pay somehow, but we wouldn't want, you know, most people wouldn't want to be the ones that have to pay, but they understand that someone has to pay, and this comes from the inside. It's not like Europe has placed this plague upon us. But
right.
So what about South Africa? How is it being reported there?
Well, in South Africa, I mean, because we also get a lot of the European news channels like Sky News and the BBC and CNN. So we can compare. I mean, our South African news is generally more focused on what's going on in South Africa, because you can have a lot of access to the international news, but there is a lot of mentioning of it when something happens, like especially the riots that happen. Like that really, I'm sure, goes a long way in a lot of other news channels around the world. But we do see it, but it's more of a side issue for us, because now it's not directly affecting us like it is, say, France, you know.
Yeah, understandable. Turkey, I'm sure, as usual, you guys don't care, but, you know, if the Eurozone goes down the crapper, we won't have enough money to buy all your gas. That yeah, must right. be a concern.
Dude, you're going to keep on buying our gas no matter what happens to your money. We don't need
We're just
going to
pay in
it.
A different currency, right?
Yeah, but if your currency crashes, then that's good for us. We can buy more property in your countries. We can travel and meet some tourists and sub tipping you and all of that. Come on, guys. You'll be happy with us. You'll like us.
So you're basically saying that the Saudis are cheering when the Greeks have one more they need Country. More money from the EU.
Oh, definitely. So here in Saudi, every time the euro goes down, it's a celebration.
Okay, we're joking, but seriously, I mean, it's not at all a concern. Greece is not on your
No, I'm not joking. I'm being serious.
Oh, okay. Well, it's great.
We do celebrate. When the euro goes down, we celebrate.
No, okay, I'm sure you do, but...
Because we're linked to the dollar.
Yeah.
We're pegged to the dollar. So if when the euro goes down, then it helps us. That means we can buy stuff from Europe easily.
So when the dollar goes down, you're not celebrating?
No, it's a disaster here. We import. Most of our products are imports. We don't export much. So
other than oil.
Yeah, so the average Joe is really affected very badly when it comes to currencies and whether the dollar is up or down. So
Tommy Tuckey.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, when the whole economic thing was going down in the United States, did Saudi ever consider switching from the dollar to the EU as their main source of currency?
If you're talking about the government, definitely they haven't thought for a second, and they're still insisting to stick to the dollar. However, if you're talking about professionals and so on, there's a huge movement demanding that we unpeg ourselves from the dollar.
Interesting. Turkey, I think your microphone is rubbing against something.
I think I'm just a little few feet away from the...
Okay.
Why? It's better now?
Yeah. Cool. Thanks. All right. So I guess Greece.
Well, yeah, what I wanted to ask was, what do you think could be the resolution to this whole situation? Like, how does Greece get out of this? And do they either leave the EU or do they relinquish more control? Or?
That is impossible. Greece cannot leave the EU. I mean, obviously, they it's in the realm of possible things that would happen in this reality, but I don't think anyone in the EU wants to let that happen, because once that happens, it means the euro is not as stable as a currency, is not as stable as we thought it was, because any country can sort of, put it in jeopardy. It means we need to get the Greece out, and any other country that's in difficulty can get out, and no one wants to see that happen. So the way I see it happening, the way we understand the situation is going to evolve, roughly, is we're going to keep paying for Greece. And there's no way around it. And if Italy is in trouble, we're going to pay for that too. So, I mean, in a sense, it might be just me, but I really feel like, yes, the Greeks are a little bit worse off than everyone else, but it's not like everyone else is in great shape either. So we're throwing the stone, but sort of cautiously, because others might start throwing stones at us too very soon.
I think also the other problem with Greece is that it's not like Italy, where they've got other sources of income. Greece's main source is tourism. And the problem with where they are right now, and because I think the Greeks can be quite stubborn, is that they're just raising all their prices. And in such an economic downturn for the rest of the world, no one wants to go to a more expensive country to go on holiday. If they're going on holiday, they're going to go somewhere else, like Turkey or Croatia or Romania or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. And I mean, it's not like the situation is absolutely similar, and maybe Greece and probably Portugal are really in the worst situation. Others are not in such a dire state. But Turkey, you started saying something.
I'm just saying that Turkey, the country, actually is expensive right now.
Is it?
It's very expensive. Yeah, compared to 2, 3, 4 years ago, it's very expensive since they changed their currency. I think they removed they removed a few zeros from it, and it's expensive now.
We are speechless.
That doesn't change the fact that tourists can always go somewhere cheaper in Europe. Greece is not the only source of tourism in Europe, you know, and I think compared to Italy, which exports a hell of a lot more of other things, you know, whereas Greece doesn't, they rely on that tourism completely. And now that not a lot of people are going to Greece, you know.
Yeah, but Europe in general is very expensive thanks to the euro.
Well, yeah, I guess. Okay, let's move on to another lovely story that's been making the headlines. Actually, I'm not sure how international this is, but you guys tell me. Actually, I wanted to talk about, well, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who's been very public in the past few weeks, but maybe we can mention the other huge story, which is that Palestine has been, has asked to become a member of the UN. It was only yesterday. And that obviously was a huge, huge story. And I guess I would be interested to hear from Turkey first how this is being, you know, reported in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, it's reported easily. It's never going to happen. U.S. is going to veto it.
And that's a good thing or that's a bad thing?
Horrible thing. Okay. You're denying a people their rights to have their own country.
Right. I guess...
So let's say Obama is going to be up there with George Bush Jr. after the veto.
Is going to be... Oh, you mean up there in the hated... yes. We hate American presidents club?
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, here it's also... Yeah, they're requesting it, but never going to happen. And France is posturing as sort of a middleman, as a... not a middleman, but trying to mediate the situation. They're trying to not take sides, and but actually,
this is what happens when you have a country that has the right to veto the votes of the entire world.
Well, yeah, I guess, yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, just to be fair, it's not just the U.S. that has the right to veto.
Yeah, I'm saying veto in general. I'm not saying the U.S. alone.
Yeah.
This whole veto thing shouldn't exist in the U.S.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but that's a different debate. But yeah, I mean, from
all right,
what
France gets the veto. Yeah, all right.
You know, as long as we get it, it's fine. The other ones,
I bet everybody from every country that has no veto would agree with me, but people who have veto rights will disagree.
Probably, yeah.
What do you say, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a one-sided argument there. I mean, South Africa's got no standing when it comes to vetoing anything.
And what's their standing? What's your standing on the Palestinian requesting to become a country question?
Well,
not you personally,
know,
but
I think South Africa's stance. I mean, since the end of the apartheid, I think South Africa's become a much more diplomatic country, you know, and in an issue like this, I think their stance is that
it's not our place to judge.
Exactly. Like, it's a difficult situation, and the fact that America has really put a firm foot in the ground of where they stand, you know, makes the situation very difficult for everybody, you know. And it's a very touchy subject. And for me personally, I don't really have an opinion one way or the other. But I'm concerned as to where this all leads. You know, where ultimately and when ultimately does it get resolved? Because it's been going on for a very long time, and ultimately I think it's got to come to a head somehow.
Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to. It could stay like this for, you know, even longer. But, I mean, at this point, I think here, the way we're understanding the situation is we're not expecting anything to really come out of this. And from what we're hearing, even in the territories in Israel, Palestinians are not are happy that the request has been put forward, but no one is really expecting anything out of it. It's a request that's put forward to put the pressure in order to get something else. You know,
but don't you think that the people of Palestine
want it, of course. Oh yeah, there's no doubt. But
don't you think that once they find out that America has vetoed it, it's not been accepted, that they're going to be very upset and maybe retaliate in some way?
I don't know. I really couldn't speak to this. I have no idea. I just, from what we're hearing in the news, the situation, you know, we're obviously we have journalists in Palestine, I mean, you know, in Israel, reporting on people's perception and reaction to the request, and they're being very they're expressing a lot of joy and pride, but at the same time they know that this is never going to go through, right. And they know that not in a way that says, oh my God, I can't believe it's not going to go through. They're saying they're sort of resigned to the idea that, well, it we know it's not going to go through. So the idea that it's being proposed even is a good thing in itself. Does this make sense, Turkey? Or
I think everybody already knows that's never going to happen, at least not in this lifetime of ours.
Yeah,
there's especially with the current administration in Israel, Netanyahu was clear in saying there will be no peace, and so we don't. It's a complicated situation. This is the Middle East. This is where all the nutcases meet and start to make chaos and start blowing each other up. So
yeah.
But what would be the situation if America didn't get involved?
If America didn't veto
anything and they stood by like everyone else,
then well, the UN would vote. The most likely thing is that the UN would vote for a Palestinian nation,
and that would make the situation of Israel incredibly complicated. And
it's complicated, and you know, in a way or another, the Palestinian state kind of exists already in the UN. When if you consider that the borders of Israel are recognized as the 67 border, 1967 borders, and every other piece of land outside those borders are considered occupied by the UN. The only difference is most of those lands are supposed to be owned by other countries. Like the Gaza is supposed to be controlled by Egypt, owned by Egypt. The West Bank should be owned by Jordan. The Golan Heights by Syria. And the difference is now the Palestinians are asking for their own state, and they want to put all of these old regions that were owned by these countries for their own statehood.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, if that did happen, do you think it would make things... Would that resolve the situation? I mean, obviously it wouldn't, but...
It definitely would not, but personally I think it would ease things a little.
It would stabilize, maybe. Maybe the whole situation there would... everybody would know where they stand.
Definitely. It's not going to solve everything. There will still be trouble. There will still be fighting. There will still be people blowing each other up. But I think it will ease lives. It will make things easier for people to handle. Two states, independent, they have their own governments, they run whatever they do. If the Palestinians don't... The Israelis keep on using that it's for their own protection. If they let the Palestinians exist, and then they could start doing terrorism, they could start using to build an army to fight them and so on. But the fact is, there's no point of that. What you're saying is, if you make peace with the Palestinians, then that's it. You made peace with Egypt, you made peace with Jordan, so why aren't you complaining about these countries who have militaries and are independent?
Well, it's because they can't agree on the conditions of the peace.
Conditions of the peace, you can have a basic peace. It doesn't have to be a complete peace. You can just agree, at least give them their nations. That would at least, in, whether this is true or not, but in my personal opinion, I think that would at least make them happy and would make them more willing to compromise and give things up since they got something that's worth it. So it's better to protect what they have than to try to gain something and lose what they have.
So do you think that this would be an achievable goal? I mean, obtaining the creation of the official creation of the state would be an achievable goal if it wasn't Netanyahu who was in power in Israel. Do you think someone else would be more willing to accept it?
Achievable? No. More achievable. There's a better chance? Yes, definitely.
Mm. Well, of course.
With Netanyahu, the chances, like, I would say there's less than a 1% chance.
Yeah.
With someone else, I would give it up to 50% chance.
Okay.
So that's a huge difference of percentages, at least. So, yeah, it's a very complicated thing. And I think the biggest complication, and you can think that there's a lot of problems when it comes to the peace. You have the right to return for the Palestinians.
Sorry, Turkey, but your mic is really having parasites. I don't know what's happening. But
all right. Better now?
I guess so.
All right. So, as I said, this whole situation is the return of the people to their lands, the Palestinians who were taken away from their lands and so on. Those are, at the end, those are resolvable. The biggest problem with any peace in Israel and Palestine is the situation of Jerusalem.
Of course.
And that is the real problem. I think the Palestinians were more willing to negotiate. They said, okay, give us East Jerusalem, you can have West Jerusalem, just like the UN. And the Israelis refused to give them any part of Jerusalem, and that's where the problem is. Mm. And personally, I think Jerusalem should be an international city, independent.
Hmm. Interesting idea. I like it. Is that something you just pulled out of your... is it an idea that's been floated around?
It's an idea that's been floating around, and there are people who support it. It's people do think that since it's a melting pot of three religions, and they all think of it as a holy site, that it should be international, it shouldn't be controlled by a specific country. And it's more about Israel, because Israel is a Jewish state. It's more that not being controlled by a specific religion.
Hmm. Well,
right, don't you think if that did happen and it was an international territory and all these different religions were coming together for religious reasons, there would be conflict in that area, in that zone?
No. Most religions, so the exceptions of the, and even with Jews, but the only Jews you have problems are the extremists. And extremist Jews are the ones who give the problem. But I think most religions, Christians, Jews, Muslims, already know what they got and what they have and what they own, and which is what the religious parts in this city is.
Yeah, I mean, I think if somehow it was determined that Jerusalem was an independent international, you know, city, it could be possible to have a maybe it wouldn't be easy, obviously, but to have a sort of religious administration that would jointly administrate everything. And it wouldn't be easy to form, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I'm for it. International Jerusalem, independent, awesome plan. Let's go that way. Let's do it.
Or you can just use my drastic plan. We can just nuke the city and be over with it.
That would be another solution. I'm not sure I support it as much. Okay, let's move on to our lovely friend of the IMF, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who came back. I don't really know if this is a local story for France or if it is an international story, but I'm eager to find out. Basically, he came back to France a couple of weeks ago and did his first real interview after the scandal. Sorry. And sort of the first time he spoke and explained himself. And
Sorry, Patrick. Just to clarify, the scandal is the thing where he was in New York and there was a housekeeper who came in and something happened there. Is that the scandal we're talking about?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess I sort of have my answer for South Africa. It's not really the biggest of your concerns.
Well, for us, I don't think it even really touched our news. I mean, I think it was more localized.
Even back then when it first happened?
No, when it happened, I mean, it was sensationalized because of what had happened, not because of... And there was a lot of stuff, I think, going on at the time with Italy's prime minister at the time.
Yeah, and it hasn't stopped, by the way, so...
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that I think at that time, because of all that stuff was going on... that this was also a part of another thing where they were like, oh, and here's another person who's also been, you know, acting incorrectly.
Wow, nice dancing around the turn here.
Patrick, you have so much fun with your leaders. Can you just help us and teach our leaders how to have scandals here? It should be more fun here.
Well, it's funny that you say it like that, because I actually had an interesting discussion with my fiancée, I was going to say girlfriend, my fiancée, who, as listeners might know, is from Scandinavia, so she has a very, a much stronger outlook on how to judge him as a politician in general, and in that specific issue in particular, and she sort of won me over, and she was saying it's incredible to me that French people, and even more women, you know, French women, would consider forgiving him. And thankfully, he's actually not running, and I don't think he would have had a chance if he did run. For those who don't know, he was a strong potential presidential candidate for the upcoming elections of 2012, the presidential elections. Obviously, when the scandal broke, his chances shattered. But now there was a question of whether or not he would actually run. And the interesting thing is, it wasn't, we're talking a lot about, you know, the realm of possibilities, but it wasn't outside the realm of possibilities that he would. And that completely flabbergasted my fiancé. She couldn't comprehend how people would potentially forgive or accept him, even though, you know, he hasn't been judged guilty or anything, but he had sex with a maid in a hotel 10 minutes after meeting her. And for her, even if there wasn't rape, even if you take away everything illegal about it, and even if you don't consider the immorality of it, which I understand some people can question, her argument is that guy is in the run almost for the presidential race, and he would do something as idiotic as having sex with a maid who comes to him in a hotel, with the risk that something like that would happen. Do you want a guy who's that brash and that, you know, who doesn't have a clear grasp on the risks to be running your country? And I don't know. I mean, we've had interesting discussions on this on Google Plus and other places. And overall, I think she did win me over. And I do have a concern for the French psyche in general. Meaning, I'm wondering if that disregard for... I don't want to be super Puritan and say... Because traditionally in France, you know, you separate very clearly the private and the public sphere. And if someone has an affair, a politician, it's the private sphere. And you don't really worry about that. It shouldn't influence your opinion of them as a public person. The problem is, I'm wondering how much of this is based in a sort of misogynic view of, you know, the strong man, and the strong man is, you know, he has sex with girls and it doesn't really matter, but in that position of power, it's highly inappropriate, not because of moral reasons, but if a powerful man comes to a woman and, you know, sort of propositions her, you can't know whether or not she accepted it for fear of repercussions or because she's actually agreeing to it. And for that appearance of impropriety, you should refrain from things like that. And the fact that we French accept it poses the question of what's our view on that on that whole issue. I don't know if I'm being very clear, but
no, you are, Patrick. I think also what you're saying is that France really didn't take kindly to his actions, and that was the direct cause of why he didn't run in the end.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but in another country, it would have been not even a question. And here,
I don't know if I agree with that, because if you look at what happened to Clinton and his whole scandal, I mean, that was a huge deal. And that really was his personal life. I mean, it wasn't morally correct, I suppose, but it had a huge effect on the people and the people's opinion and everything that happened in America at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's also something that sort of posed a moral issue to me, because I didn't really care all that much about what Clinton did. And, you know, so it's sort of difficult. And people probably know, maybe they don't, but I'm mostly right wing in France, which is, you know, probably center anywhere else. But, and Strauss-Kahn is from the left wing. So I'm like, am I judging him more harshly because he's left wing? Yeah. I really don't think so. But I'm not managing to put the finger exactly on why the Clinton thing is not as bothersome to me. I mean, yes, it was improper, obviously, but the big issue, the enormous scandal, legal aspect of the scandal, was that he lied under oath. He said, "I did not have sex with that woman," and that's a different problem. I mean, obviously, he was deceiving the everyone when he was saying, "I did not have sex with that woman." And, you know, oral sex is still sex. So, and for that, when I asked about that to my fiancée, I was like, "But hey, Clinton, blah blah blah," and she was like, "Well, there's no question that he, well, no, not there's no question, but her first reaction was like, "Well, he should have been impeached. He lied," and that was interesting too, because what she was the reason she was saying that, I'm not sure if she was exactly, you know, absolutely serious, 100% he should have been impeached, but she was referring to the fact that in Scandinavia, these kinds of scandals do not, people don't survive them, you know, whereas in Europe, at least in France and ridiculously so in Italy, they do seem to survive them for an inordinate amount of time, and that's something that I'm not sure. It's so ingrained in my culture and in my view of the world that only now am I starting to wonder, should we be accepting all of these scandals? There's an enormous financial scandal that touches on the government and members of the party of Sarkozy before he became president. And there's a feeling in France that these things, they're sort of, yeah, well, you know, it should be judged, but it's not going to be, so whatever, there's nothing we can do. And a lot of people say we should judge someone on his ability to do his job, not on his ability. Financial scandals might be different, but not on his moral issues and more moral errors. If he can do his job really well, no one is perfect. So if he can do his job, at least we'll get something out of it. And I'm, yeah, so go ahead.
Sorry, I don't know if I totally agree with that aspect, because, I mean, being in politics and having another general job is two different things. Let's say you were talking about a factory worker and his personal life wouldn't even, unless it directly affected the job itself, like, it wouldn't even come into question about how well he does his job as long as he does his job well. But in politics, I think it's a very different story, because if you're talking about someone who has to make moral decisions for the country and in his personal life he doesn't make a moral decision, what's to say he's not going to make a moral decision when it comes to something big like the Israel-Palestine story.
Well, that's exactly the point that that Sonia was making, my fiancé was making. She was like, if he's not at least showing sound judgment in this case, how can you trust him to show sound judgment in other cases? And I think in France we have a very strong fear, not fear, but concern with moral puritanism. And we don't want to have to judge people, because moral is very fluid. If you ask different people, you're going to have different, not different people, but maybe obviously different people, but I mean different cultures. And that's another argument that came back quite a bit in my discussions with other people. It's, you know, morals, you can't really say what is moral and what isn't, depending on the country, it will change. Obviously, in the US and in France, it's a very different thing. And I don't really subscribe to that, because at some point you have to draw a line. You know, moral, cultural relativism only goes so far. At some point, when something is wrong, then it's wrong, period. And certainly, I don't want to make it sound like anyone is defending Strauss-Kahn in the case that he did rape her. You know, that is not something that anyone would accept. But since he was not, judged and condemned, it's hard for us to, because when you go down that line of people have to be moral, then there is this feeling that no one's perfect. And if you want to dig for something, you're going to find something, even something small, and then you can blow it out of proportion. And this is not constructive. Then you get into things like, you know, the U.S., the American elections, where it's just trash, you know, battle, negative campaigning all through the campaign. And I understand why we don't want to have that. But the question is still there. Should we have more concern for how a person behaves in their personal life? And I think the conclusion I came to, and now I'm going to stop talking and let you guys talk a little bit more. The conclusion I came to is we don't want to be like the US, because that's too much, but I still think that there's not enough of that concern in France. And maybe there is a middle ground somewhere where we should be more concerned with what our politicians do, because if we're not, then obviously they're going to keep doing it. And it's our job to be, you know, to show them that we care about that. If we don't, then no one's going to do it. So,
No, I understand your point of view, Patrick. But I must say, in South Africa, if that situation, and it actually did happen in South Africa to us, where our current president, Jacob Zuma, he was in that boat where he was accused of raping a young lady. And from my recollection, I'm not sure exactly what happened to the case, but I know he wasn't found guilty. It was either thrown out of court or something happened or they settled. And it really didn't seem to impact his campaign at all. I mean, he went through to win his election with flying colors, you know. And I think that's because our culture is a very, very complicated one, and it's not as straightforward as it seems. Like, it's not, I don't think that the people were okay with that. I think it's that there's a lot more that happened at that time with our with the parties that were running and the reasons why he won. But I know for the people.
Well, then the problem is, in that specific case, you can't really, you know, people have to be presumed innocent. And in that case, if he wasn't found guilty, then you can't let your opinion of him change, because if you do, then it's enough to accuse someone of something to destroy him. And you can't have a system, that kind of system doesn't really work, right?
Right, no, and I agree. I mean, because then you'd have opponents saying, you did this, you did this, you did this, and then no one would win and we'd get nowhere. But yeah, look, I'm not familiar with the specifics of his case, but I know that it really didn't look good for him in a general sense to the public. You know, the public, I think, was very appalled about what was coming to light. And in general, it didn't affect him too badly, you know, and maybe that's because of South Africa's difference. We've got a lot of differences to Europe, clearly, but it's interesting how France made it such a big deal that it affected the career for him to not even run anymore.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I made that clear earlier, but he's not running, and he wouldn't have won even if he did run. There was, you know, polls
enough
were showing,
opposition,
enough, yeah. I mean, opposition even from his own political camp. And Turkey is answering the phone. From his political camp, that, you know, he couldn't run. And it, to be clear, he did have sex with that girl. Now, whether or not it was, you know, immoral, illegal, paid for, or rape, the we will probably never know. But he did have sex with her, and that's enough for, you know, at least to show him in that negative light. Turkey, you're being very quiet. First, was that reported on in the end? And I mean, that his coming, not coming out, but his interview in Saudi Arabia? And also, what did people think of this in the end?
Where are you talking to me?
Yes, sorry. You were
Sorry. I was answering the phone, sorry.
Oh, so, okay. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. Yeah, so I was asking, in the end, did people care about his version of what happened, which was actually very murky? He only said there was no money exchanged, there was no violence, and that's all I'll say about it. Were they interested? And also, I mean, obviously, Saudi Arabia's people would be judged, I imagine, a lot more harshly for these kinds of things. But what's your take on that in the end?
I don't think dropping the charges, him leaving, anybody really cared, because for everybody else, the story ended as soon as he dropped out of the World Bank and someone took over.
Mm, okay.
So I'm sure there's people who were interested, but in general, nobody really cared in Saudi what was going on. It was the end of the story for everybody here.
Aww. And so you don't care about poor DSK?
It's not like he's going to affect us in any way at all.
Of course.
It mattered when he was president of the bank.
But I mean, the juicy sex scandal wasn't something that that kept running.
Let's say I'm going to sound racist, but people saw the picture of the maid, and they say either this guy is crazy,
okay,
for raping her, or he has weird taste. So either way, we're not interested.
Weird taste? Why weird taste?
Because she wasn't attractive.
Oh, because she wasn't attractive. Okay, I thought it was because she was black.
No, there are people who think black. It depends on who you talk to. No, it was not attractive.
Okay, because you said because you said this is going to sound racist, I was like, wow, it actually is very racist.
No.
Okay, it's just because she wasn't attractive.
I'm sure there were people who thought, why would he do it with a black woman? Definitely. But no, that's not the general opinion. General opinion, okay. She was like...
Patrick, what do you think would have been the case if this hadn't happened till after his election? If this only came out after he had won his presidency? And became president.
Well, it's a very interesting question. I think it would actually have gone away, because once he is president, first of all, he has immunity, and so they can't do anything to him for, you know, however long he is president.
Yeah.
And then the theory of the manufactured scandal is even more believable for. Not that it's not believable now, and there's no reason. It's much more believable now, actually, because it sabotages his chances. But it would be, I'm sure, more people would have believed it was a manufactured scandal if he had been president, if it had come out afterwards. So, yeah. Last question. Turkey... What would happen if a scandal like that came to light in Saudi Arabia about some Saudi official?
Let's say he better never come back to Saudi.
Okay. So what would be the consequence?
Well, no, wait. If it's a woman, no, he might come back. He might survive. But if it's with a guy...
What do you mean? If a woman has a scandal like this?
No, if a guy has it with a woman...
Oh, okay. You mean if it's a heterosexual scandal?
Yeah, because there is a case right now. And if you remember, in the UK, they've caught a guy who killed some other guy, Saudi prince. who killed one of his he killed one of his servants in London. He was accused, he was arrested, and the prosecutor declared that he was actually having an affair with this guy, with his servant. So, and
I remember this case. It was quite big in the UK at the time, and there was elevator footage of him at the time. It was a big story in the UK.
Yeah. So the thing is, so that guy, if he ever leaves jail, he could never come back to Saudi.
Okay. So obviously, because the laws against homosexuality are much.
No, he wouldn't have a problem with the government. He's from the royal family. The government would find something or just cover it up or something. But the people won't let him pass easily.
Oh, okay.
So he will be a huge target. And if you ever followed that case, it was kind of, in a way, hilarious in its own way that the defense did not put too much effort. And they weren't aggressive. They weren't aggressive in proving that he did not murder him. They were more aggressive in proving that he did not have an affair with him. That was their concern.
I see. Interesting. Is there a homosexual community in Saudi Arabia, or not at all?
Underground, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, obviously. But
Definitely. I doubt it. I doubt there isn't. There must be. There's definitely.
What's the government stance on that? I know what it was when I was there, but how liberal are they about it these days?
They're not liberal at all.
What's the penalty if you're convicted of homosexuality?
Jail time, maybe some lashes.
Okay, so pretty standard.
It's standard. It's the harsh punishment if they prove that he actually had sex with a guy, and that's difficult to prove, and that's the one that carries with it the death penalty.
Oh, wow, okay.
But that's impossible to prove. It's a very complicated system. Four people have to have seen him at the same moment having sex, and they have to see that actually the sex act, the penetration, and so on.
So you can't. Wow. So you can't show it by, I don't know, video camera or something.
The video is not accepted at all. It's rejected. Okay.
All right. So I guess if you're in Saudi Arabia, don't have sex with a guy if you're a guy in front of people.
Definitely.
And you should be safe. Is it the same for women? Is female homosexuality as harshly condemned? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Let's move on to what came out of the U.S. And maybe we're not going to spend too much time on it, but there were two things, and I can't believe that I almost forgot the second one. The first one is Troy Davis's execution, which did make a lot of noise in... Well, not a lot, but it did make some noise in France.
Oh, the hell is Troy Davis?
Well, okay, there you go. He is a black convict that was condemned to the death sentence something like 20 years ago, and he has always claimed his innocence, and 8 or 7 out of the 9 witnesses have recanted and said that there was either, you know, pressure from the police, or the crime he was judged for was he was condemned for, actually, was the killing of a police officer. And the witnesses said that there was pressure from the police, or that they identified another person because they were mistaken, and they now realize it was another person who had committed that crime, and he has always claimed his innocence. And the last possible chance for him to not be executed was this past weekend. And obviously, I mean, Turkey, you probably don't know, but he was in the end executed. It brought up, I guess it didn't really bring up a huge amount of debate here, but it was mentioned, and mostly the thing that we take out of it is we don't really understand how that works, because we're very strongly against the death penalty for the... Well, I shouldn't say that. It's not very strongly, but most of us are against the death penalty, and obviously we don't have the death penalty in France. It's always a big story when something like that happened, and it felt especially heart-wrenching because it seems clear... Well, yeah, it seems clear that he actually didn't do it. So, yeah, that was also a big story that came out of the U.S. Did you guys... obviously, Turkey, you didn't hear about it. Paolo, was it a story in South Africa?
No, you know, actually, I don't think it was mentioned at all. But, you know, it's an interesting topic because here in South Africa, before the end of the apartheid, the death penalty was quite... It was in place and it was rigorously enforced. But after that, Nelson Mandela, he decided that was not the way forward for the country. And it's since been abolished. And... you know, on the one hand, it's the right, and this is my personal opinion, it's the right move for society because I don't believe an eye for an eye is the answer to certain problems. But on the other hand, our prison system has really felt it because our prisons are in a very bad shape right now because I don't know if you guys have heard, but South Africa's crime rate is quite high, and it's a big problem. And you know, sending a criminal to prison is not a solution because of how bad the prison system is. So, what do we do with the worst case criminals, like the murderers and the rapists? And you know, do you send them to a system that's going to make them worse off and come out even worse than ultimately getting rid of them? You know, it's a difficult topic, and also because sometimes our judicial system can be a bit corrupt. What happens to those who are innocent or maybe innocent, and do they get a fair trial? And you know, it's a very difficult thing. And you know what I thought about that a lot, and you know, something, I don't know what your feelings are, Patrick. I'm pretty sure I know what Turkey's feelings are, but in Saudi, like Turkey was saying, you know, you steal something, your hand gets chopped off. You know, you kill somebody, your head gets chopped off.
It's not as simple as that.
All right. So no,
That's oversimplifying it,
but it's very extreme measures of punishment, and it's very little. It's taxes on the system. It's very small. You know,
yeah, because you don't have to pay for his imprisonment for whatever years.
Right. Like in America, I think it's something ridiculous. Like every inmate that's in for life costs the taxpayer something like $8,000 a year or something out. You know, it's a lot of money to keep someone who's a criminal alive for such a long time and feed them and shelter and the security that you have to put in place around them. And, you know, what's the solution? Is a radical solution like Saudi's a better solution, or is, you know, the death penalty a solution?
Well, I guess, you know, in France, our prison system is definitely in bad shape also. And that's an issue, which is sort of a different issue. I think the reason why we are... I don't have precise knowledge of this, but I believe that one of the main reasons why we are against the death penalty is... exactly the case of Troy Davis. It's the case of we can't be certain, or in most cases we're not going to be certain. So it's not a question of life is sacred and you can't take it, although I'm sure it's a factor. It's more a question of you will have, you know, some of the people who are pro-death penalty will say, yeah, but you only apply it when you're sure, when you're absolutely sure. And that's great in theory. Maybe more people would get behind it if that was possible. But in reality, it's really not possible. You'll always have, in an imperfect system, which our legal system definitely is, you'll always have people who are actually innocent who will be judged guilty. And for those people, if you put them in prison, then there's always a chance that maybe you're going to be able to rectify your mistake. But if you kill them, then, you know, they're dead. So, yeah, that's, I think, the angle that we're coming at from. It's not really a problem of prison, you know, the state of our prison system, or what do we do with them, or what's the appropriate punishment. We don't really worry about that. In the case of the death penalty, the potential innocence of the person that's being, found guilty is one of our biggest concerns. So.
But with that decision, I mean, if they're found guilty, more likely than not, they're not going to be able to reverse that decision the first time. You know, like in Troy Davis's case, like what would be the situation if he spent his life in prison? He would still be considered guilty.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
he would
in
still
that case,
serve the punishment, and he probably might have been innocent.
In that case, yes, but there are many, you know, there are things like the Innocence Project in the U.S., and there are many others where you had DNA evidence that wasn't possible to analyze back then that cleared people that had been judged guilty, and had they been executed, then, you know, they would have cleared the ghost.
You were about to say something, Turkey?
Oh, no. No, no.
He was just,
I'm pro,
groaning.
I'm pro death penalty, so I'm just sitting on the side, like.
No, well, let us know what. So, what do you are you pro death penalty? Do you think it's a deterrent? Do you think it's a fair punishment?
I think for if you kill someone, I don't think the government has the right to decide whether you live or die. I think it's the family of the dead.
But what about the issue I'm mentioning, the fact that you know, if you can't know, that you sometimes aren't sure.
If I'm not sure.
If you find someone and you think it's probably him, and, you know, the family is convinced that it's him, or it's, you know, there could be a mistake.
Well, actually, I could be wrong about this, but from what I know about the system of death penalty here, a confession is required to receive the death penalty.
Yeah, but even a confession can be. I mean, maybe I'm watching too many, lawyer shows, but even a conviction can be questionable at some point. But
trust me, nobody's going to confess for a crime that they might confess to something, but not something that leads to death penalty.
Maybe not.
I doubt
Maybe. And it's interesting you're mentioning, you know, the family should decide, the family of the victim, because I think one of the very important principles of modern justice is it's not out of vengeance that you have to make a decision. You know, justice has to be delivered according to rules, according to the law,
but the law shouldn't be
written by the people, because
you can't deny someone if he wants his vengeance. You can't deny it for him if he kills someone loved. Because if you deny it, then they're going to use other systems to get their revenge.
Well,
then everything will
maybe.
Be hectic and crazy. So it's rather to put it in the system.
Maybe in Saudi Arabia, but I mean, not in France. I don't think people have the resources to send out Don Corleone after the person who murdered their wife. But no, I mean, obviously, if someone, I don't know, if someone rapes a child or whatever, the father or the mother is going to want them dead or flayed alive. Or
actually, when it comes to rape, I think death penalty, period, does have nothing to do with the victims.
Okay. All right.
Especially
well,
if someone rapes a child, I think they should cut his head off and get rid of him.
Yeah, it's a difficult problem. But in the case of Troy Davis, for example, what's your, you know, in that case where people recanted and there's only one witness after those 20 years?
I refuse to comment on that. That's for their judicial system to decide, and I have no right to judge them because I don't know the case.
That is probably the wisest answer any one of us could have given. All right. The other thing that came out of the U.S. that I wanted to mention, which I honestly almost forgot about, is the 10 years of 9/11. It was obviously earlier in the month, but for some reason, I mean, when the... okay, I don't know where to start, but I'm really not someone who wants the attention brought back to 9/11 every single day. And I agree that in the U.S., maybe a little bit too much has been done of it, maybe a lot too much. And it's not that it wasn't a tragedy, but it's been instrumentalized in a way that I guess it's obvious to everyone. But
it's being abused.
It's been abused. And it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. And what happened afterwards was okay, let's not redo the debate on 9/11 itself, but it was the 10 years, and I sent out a few messages on social networks saying during that weekend, I said, I really hope I wake up on, I think it was Monday, and the only thing we have to talk about in the news is that it's been 10 years and one day, and not there's been a horrible terrorist attack. And the reason I was saying that, and the reason I was saying it like that, was that I feel, and that's me personally, I'm not sure it's the case for, you know, my countrymen, I feel that it's been 10 years, and it's a milestone, and since nothing terrible happened on the 10-year anniversary, we sort of can move on now. And there's definitely, you know, Bin Laden is dead, and terrorism, I feel terrorism is sort of not as much of an issue as it was a few years ago. Certainly we have to remain vigilant, but the young Muslim populations don't seem to be turning to terrorism as there are certainly disagreements between the you know, Middle East and the West, and but it's not as much of an issue as it was. And the reason I'm mentioning that I almost forgot about it is also because I feel that we are now moving on. It's been 10 years. It went, you know, yeah, basically we are starting to move on. Is that something? Am I the only one thinking this? Is it completely out there or?
No, I agree. I agree with you, Patrick. I mean, nothing to take away from what happened to America, you know. But I agree. It's been 10 years. You know, the Americans have done a fairly good job of keeping the country safe, in somewhat detriment to the American people. But they have done a good job in the fact that nothing else has happened. And when September 11th this year happened, I think they did a very good, like, I think the Americans do certain things right, and one of the things they did very well was they remembered what happened in a very tasteful way. And I agree, it's 10 years, let's move forward, you know, let's not forget about it, but not make it the big deal that it always has been in the past, you know, like, onwards and upwards type thing, you know, and let's not look back and think about all the bad things, you know.
Yeah. Turkey, 9/11, 10 years.
I think I agree with you. I think it happened. This was a horrible thing, and definitely a lot of people died, but it's something that is gone. We need to look forward, not backwards.
Yeah. I mean, 10 years, you have kids who were, you know, not really old enough to understand the world back then, who are now almost adults that are old enough to vote. So it was such an enormous event for us. It feels like, you know, I'm at a certain stage in my life now. Everything from the past 20 years, I understand very well, and it's not like, oh, that was so long ago that it's not, you know, it feels like I was a kid. 10 years ago, I was already an adult, so it's sort of still vivid in my memory, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But still, it's been 10 years, and yeah, so it's been 10 years, it's a long time.
Do you think that in the next 10 years, this is still going to be as big a topic as it is today?
No, I think, I hope that it won't be. And, you know, there might be another terrorist attack at some point. There might be an issue, another problem, but I think I hope it will be disconnected from 9/11 at that point. We never can be completely 100% safe. But, I think for me, and I think for a lot of people now, we've managed, we or the U.S. or, the West, if there is any way to kind of win in this, the guy that was deemed responsible for it is dead. There hasn't been any major terrorist attack in 10 years. On the day of the 10-year anniversary, that was the one day where something could potentially happen, because it's the most symbolic, nothing happened. Let's move on.
I think that the Americans, not to take anything away from what had happened, but I think they won't let it go. I think because they're such a young country as well, they will continue to make this a bigger deal than it needs to be in the future.
It's very possible. I mean, certainly a lot of people will. There's no question that it will have a lasting impact on the American psyche, and it will stay as a symbol of something. I don't know. I mean, we'll ask next time when we'll have an American on the the show, and we'll ask what they think and see if they also think it's. And I'm not. We're all being very careful. We're not saying we should forget it. Definitely not. We're just saying we should move on, which is a different thing. And right. I think some Americans agree with us. So we'll see. If you happen to be American, dear listener, and want to comment on that and say whether or not you think we should move on from 9/11, please do come on the blog and post a comment, for example, at thefelisclub.com, I believe it is, and we'd love to hear from you. All right, I guess we're almost done with the show. Before we close it, though, do any of you guys have a local story you want to talk about? I guess the DSK and the financial scandals one counts as the French one. But
I got a couple of quick ones, and because I really have to leave. I mean, my mom has a party I have to go attend.
Oh, okay.
So first, is anybody surprised that Putin is running for president?
No. That's not a local story, though.
Yeah. And second local story, Saudi Arabia, on Friday, yesterday, the 23rd of September, celebrated its 81st National Day.
What do you mean? Like it's the 81st anniversary of the country?
Yes, yes.
Woohoo! Congratulations, Saudi Arabia!
Yes. And if you would like to see people go out and party like nutcase without drinking, come visit Saudi Arabia on that day.
So what do you do when you want to celebrate? You can't drink. I think in any civilized country, America, imagine.
Do you see what drunks do when they go out partying in the streets?
Yes. I've been in Finland enough times to see what drunk people do.
Saudis do it without being drunk.
How is that even? It doesn't make sense.
No. Okay. It's reality. That's what happens.
Okay. All right. Paolo.
I have two ones. One's a real quick one. Today is South Africa's Heritage Day. It's a day that I think, after the apartheid, Mandela is celebrating the multicultural country that we are. He calls it a rainbow nation. And we've got a lot of different African ethnicities, and we've got Western ethnicities, and there's a lot of Asian influence in the country as well. And I think we're a very, very diverse country, and today is the day that they celebrate that. So that's what's going on here in South Africa. And then the one other thing I wanted to discuss, especially with you, Patrick, because it's a socialist story.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Is that here in South Africa, there's something that's come up quite recently about our mining industry. And in South Africa, the mining industry is a very, very big industry. It contributes to most of our GDP. And there's been talk in the government is nationalizing the mines, because we're in an economic situation, not nearly as bad as the rest of the world, but our power company is in a lot of need for money, and our health system needs a lot of finance, and there's talk of trying to give a lot of housing and jobs to our huge and growing poverty situation. And what they're saying is, we want to nationalize mines. Now, I don't know how you feel, but for us, it's a very dicey subject, because the mining industry brings a lot into the country, and they do it purely for profit, and they contribute a lot of that money to the, and they do it very well. They do it very well. And what has happened in them just announcing that they're thinking about it has caused all of the mining industry to halt any growth in the country, and they are really thinking about going elsewhere in Africa. So
don't do it. Nationalizing an industry is only downfall. If it's not working, then nationalize it. If it's working and getting money, trust me, you're only going to make it worse.
Interesting.
At least that's what history showed us.
So I'm the socialist here. So obviously my answer should be, well, actually, I think nationalizing is not a socialist idea. It's communist. And as we all know, communism is only a little bit less evil than Satan, so they shouldn't do it. I think it's a terrible idea. If, as exactly as Turkey is saying, is an industry failing, then maybe you need to get it in order in ways that it can't get, you know, by itself. If it's not failing, and that's where I show my my socialist aspect, then tax it. That's a much better way of dealing with the problem. I mean, it's...
Well, they do tax it. They tax it quite highly, and that's caused some of the mining operations to go elsewhere in Africa. But just the discussion of it has caused the mining industry to almost come to a halt.
To give sort of an impression, to bring it back to, you know, our Filius Clubic focus here in France, I don't think it would be even discussed. Nationalizing is very, very extreme, even for us. You have the crazy communists that would probably want to nationalize a whole bunch of industries. The reasonable guys, including the socialists, would not really consider it, unless it was a dire situation and it was really, there was no other way around anything.
Right. That's the general census I get from the people I talk to. But, you know, the government sees it as kind of a cash cow because they're in a financial strain. And they're very happy lining their pockets and trying to sort out problems by throwing money at it in the country. And they see this as an opportunity to get more money to throw at the problems at hand, you know. And everyone says, no, this is a bad idea. I mean, I know a bunch of people who have been directly affected by it because the mining industry is so large and they're pulling out, they're causing a lot of job loss. And, you know, so it's been a very upsetting thing for the country. And it's just, I think the government's being very short-sighted in just even talking about it openly.
Yeah. Well, hopefully things will get better soon, and Care Bears will be everywhere, and unicorns will spread rainbows in the world. That's my message of peace for the end of the show. Because it is the end of the show, we have reached it, and Turkey will be able to go have fun with his family. Before that, though, I would request...
Well, it's more of a matter of not being killed by my mom.
Oh, okay. So we have reached the end of the show, and Turkey will be able to not be killed by his mom. So rejoice, everyone. He will be back next month, hopefully. So before we leave, I want to say two things. Next month, I'm not certain I'll be able to do a show. I'll try, but it might be challenging because I'm traveling. So we'll see what happens.
You going?
I'm going to BlizzCon, of course.
Ah, of course.
Yes, of course.
You have to get us something from there.
I will try. Well, you know, I could get you lots of cool stuff if only we actually met one day in the future. I could give it lots of stuff to you. So you're not going, I imagine.
So when are you going to be there? When is BlizzCon?
21st and 22nd of October, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll be there. There's a chance I'm traveling to the U.S. in October. I'm not sure exactly what dates yet.
Okay, well, if you're in California, we definitely have to hook up. And by hook up, I don't mean anything that would get you killed.
Yeah, I should be in L.A. and in San Francisco and San Diego.
Ah, well, that's not really where I'm going. Anyway, let's not bore the listeners with all that just too much. Let's bore them with something else, like, for example, where they can reach you, Turkey, when you're not on the show.
You reach me on Twitter, which is twitter.com/Saudi. And you can follow me and see what I'm up to and all of my complaining and all of my restaurant hopping and cigar nights.
And there's a lot of all of that. Paolo, are you still Paolo Audio on
Yes.
Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me at twitter.com/Paolo Audio. And I'm also on Google Plus, Paolo Joachim. You can find me on
How do you spell that?
It's Paolo and Joaquim.
Joaquim. Oh, Joachim. Okay. Okay, excellent. And I am Patrick Beja, and you can find all my links on patrickbeja.com, including an interesting dissertation on the new announcements by Facebook, which are quite controversial. So if you're interested in that, you can go there and check it out. Either way, we thank you a million times for taking the time to listen to our puny show, and we hope to have you again for the next one. Have an excellent month, and talk to you soon. Bye.
Frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.